GMT on Friday. Israel continues to pound civilian targets across the Gaza Strip ahead of a temporary ceasefire, killing over 24 people at a UN-run school. And Iran warns that if Israel continues the war on Gaza following the truce, regional conditions will get out of hand and reactions become more extensive. Thank you for joining us. A temporary humanitarian ceasefire between Israel and Hamas is set to take effect in a few hours. That's according to a recent announcement by Qatar, which has mediated the deal.
The beginning of the pause will be 7 a.m. Friday, the 24th of November, and it will last, of course, as agreed, for 4 days. And the first
The spokesman said the first group of Israeli captives, including 30 individuals, will be released at 4 p.m. local time. Additionally, the first group of Palestinians held in Israeli jails will be freed later in the day. The truce will also include a comprehensive ceasefire in both the north and south of the Gaza Strip. Humanitarian aid, which has been waiting outside the southern Rafah crossing for days, will also start flowing into the Strip early in the morning. To many Palestinians, however, the ceasefire is pointless. They say it will not cut the regime's line of massacres.
What truce are you talking about with these massacres taking place? Is this called a truce? These are massacres. Before the truce and after it, Israel commits genocide. We were walking in the street when we suddenly saw this. We don't know what happened. Little children were chopping wood and the street was full of people. This home here is full of martyrs and the home there also full of martyrs. This street is filled with children. What is the fault of these children? We are poor people. We've done nothing to observe this happening to us.
The ceasefire was clinched despite the fierce opposition from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's far-right cabinet. But Netanyahu backed the agreement and vowed to continue the war.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says it has agreed to a four-day humanitarian truce in the Gaza Strip. The movement says the truce, mediated by Qatar and Egypt, includes exchange of Israeli captives with Palestinian prisoners held by the regime. Hamas said in a statement 50 Israeli captives, all women and children, will be released in exchange for the freedom of 150 Palestinian women and children. Under the agreement, hundreds of trucks of humanitarian aid, including fuel and medicine, will be brought to all areas of the Gaza Strip. During the truce, the Israeli regime is to refrain from arresting or attacking anyone all across the besieged Palestinian territory. Also, air traffic will completely stop during the truce in the southern Gaza Strip. In the north, however, air traffic will stop for 6 hours a day.
Truce will be significant for humanitarian aid because it will allow for a large number of humanitarian aid trucks and convoys to enter the Gaza Strip. But I must add that the number of humanitarian aid or the amount of that aid that's going to be allowed in is nowhere close to what was the regular, let's say, flow of humanitarian and aid.
Israel's cabinet has also voted in favor of the agreement. The war cabinet has reportedly been split on the issue for weeks. Some hardline figures believe that Israel's relentless bombing of the Gaza Strip was the best way to weaken Hamas and to free the captives. Others believe that Israel must get what it can now, however unsatisfactory.
Israel is failing military, and that's why it's in agony, and it wants a ceasefire to reset, because its ground-invading forces are failing on the ground.
Since the beginning of the Israeli onslaught on Palestinians on the 7th of October, the regime has sought to dismantle the resistance groups. However, resistance has turned the Gaza Strip into a quagmire for Israeli troops, forcing the regime to redefine its objectives. is now believed the ceasefire deal is a failure for Israel.
The agreement would reflect a change of course by Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, and his war cabinet. Right from the beginning of the war, Netanyahu announced that he was pursuing two main objectives from the war. The regime was trying to isolate and eliminate Hamas by destroying its military and governing capabilities. Netanyahu also promised to protect Israel from Gaza-based threats and attacks. Furthermore, he said his cabinet would free the captives without compromising with Hamas resistance movement. None of those objectives have been realized. Hamas has suffered some casualties, but its military capabilities, including its network of bunkers and tunnels, as well as its ability to launch retaliatory attacks on Israel forces, have largely been left untouched. Hamas and the resistance ideology is deeply rooted in the hearts and minds of Palestinian people in Gaza. Netanyahu had to abandon its uncompromising stance with regards to the captives. His cabinet was ultimately forced to strike a deal with Hamas in order to free them.
Well, absolutely. I don't think that the Israelis would have accepted to go into this kind of a truce without being dealt devastating blows by the resistance and by Hamas. Of course, the Israelis found themselves unable to achieve anything on ground, and they saw that this is a good thing for them to do. They are not doing it for the sake of humanity.
We can see from their statements in the Israeli Knesset that any truce would be a concession, and that proves that they have achieved nothing. But that's not enough. Despite the truce, all forms of resistance must continue.
Netanyahu's shift may have been critically influenced by his personal encounter with captives' families after weeks of refusal to meet them. Netanyahu and his Likud party have lost the trust and confidence of most voters.
Yes! 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 Yes!
We gather here in request that the one to be blamed is our prime minister, that he has to go down and leave his office and let another government to rule in Israel and try to make it better.
Internationally, the regime has also come under immense pressure. Thousands of people have held countless rallies against the Israeli regime and its bloodbath in Gaza, and calls war growing to refer Israel's genocide in Gaza to international criminal court.
The Gaza Strip continues to be the scene of death and destruction as Israel's genocidal war on the blockaded territory enters its 49th day. On Thursday, over two dozen people were killed and nearly 100 others injured in an Israeli airstrike on a UN-run school. The educational center, which is located in the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza, housed internally displaced people fleeing Israeli violence and bombardment in other parts of the territory. Hamas condemned the attack as, quote, a heinous massacre committed by the Nazi Zionist occupation. He said the strike was an evidence of the regime's sadism after his failure to confront resistance fighters on the battlefield. Elsewhere in southern Gaza, Israel carried out a deadly attack against a house in Rafah. Hospitals have not been spared from Israeli air raids. The health ministry in Gaza says the Indonesian hospital has once again been pounded by the regime's strikes. It expressed fear about the lives of 200 people at the hospital, including medical staff and patients. Officials in Gaza say the death toll from the Israeli onslaught, which began on October the 7th, is approaching 15,000. They say 6,150 children and 4,000 women are amongst the dead. Some 36,000 others have been wounded. As global attention is now shifting from other parts of the Palestinian territories to the Gaza Strip, Israeli forces have found it easier to go on with their atrocities in those parts. The regime is now killing Palestinians in the occupied West Bank on a daily basis. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Munah Kandil, has more.
In the afternoon hours, a number of Palestinians had been, passing over a bridge at the entrance of the Palestinian village of Burqa, East Ramallah, a group of Palestinians. And according to the residents of this village, those four Palestinians were transferring olive oil to taking them from this village to other villages. While they were passing over the bridge, Israeli forces there, stationing, of course, at the entrance of the village and at the entrances of every Palestinian village in the occupied West Bank, opened fire at those Palestinians, shot and killed 46-year-old Khadr Ilwan, originally from the village of Bitin, and wounded the three others who were accompanying Khadr Ilwan. This brings the number of Palestinians who had been killed by the Israeli forces since the beginning of the Al-Aqsa Flare and the Israeli war on the Gaza Strip to 228, because this morning also, as we earlier revealed, that a Palestinian teenager, 17-year-old Azzedin Al-Hafi, was shot and killed during the incursions and the operation in the refugee camp of Balata, East Nablus. And of course, the operation in Balata continued for several hours, where the Israelis have attacked the people, opened fire at them, prevented people to leave their homes and their businesses. A number of Palestinians had been wounded and others had been detained.
The head of the political bureau of Hamas resistance movement says the truce deal with Israel is the result of the victory of resistance fighters in the battlefield.
This is a political victory achieved through resistance in the battlefield. The enemy has failed to achieve any of its goals except massacring women, children, and citizens and destroying their homes.
Haniyeh added that the United States is the main protagonist behind Israel's war on Gaza. The Hamas chief also thanked the Iranian people and government, especially the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, for supporting Palestinians during the ongoing Israeli war on Gaza. Haniyeh was speaking in a meeting with Iran's foreign minister in Qatar. Hossein Amir Abdullahian, for his part, reaffirmed Iran's strong determination to continue supporting the Palestinian nation and resistance. Earlier, the top Iranian diplomat had issued a stern warning to Israel as he met with his Qatari counterpart, Mohammed bin Abdulrahman bin Jassim Al Thani, in Doha.
If the Israeli regime continues the war following this phase of the truce, conditions in the region will get out of hand and reactions will become more extensive.
Iran's foreign minister added that Israel cannot continue the war without U.S. support. He said attacks on American bases in West Asia are resistance groups' reaction to Washington's support for the Tel Aviv regime's genocidal war. Amir Abdullahian also rejected claims about Iran being behind those attacks. He stressed that Israel will not be able to eliminate Hamas through military or political means. Meanwhile, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said Israel was forced to accept a truce due to the resistance of Palestinian fighters and people.
This truce is a first step toward putting a total halt to war crimes committed by the usurping and child-killing Zionist regime against Palestinian citizens and women and children. It is the outcome of indescribable perseverance of the resistant people of Palestine, as well as the historic struggle and steadfastness of resistance fighters, and is the first step toward victory.
Ghannouni said Iran will continue diplomatic efforts to help stop Israel's war machine, turn the truce into a permanent ceasefire, and send aid to the people of Gaza. He added that Palestinian people have proved that they are capable of determining their fate both in the battlefield, field and through political means. He said Palestinians will give an appropriate and decisive response to any miscalculation or aggressive and short-sighted measure by Israel and its supporters. In an extraordinary and heroic move, the Yemeni armed forces seized an Israeli cargo ship in the Red Sea on Sunday in response to the regime's deadly aggression against Gaza. A correspondent from Iran's Arabic news channel Al Alam has visited the ship in a Yemeni port and filed this report.
Docking off the Israeli ship Galaxy Leader off the coast of Yemen or even crossing the Red Sea is not welcome unless mandatory with an invitation. The seizure of ship is in line with this narrative, and the Yemeni forces did it remarkably, displaying support for the Palestinian cause.
I'm standing on the deck of Galaxy Leader, an Israeli ship that was seized by Yemen's naval forces. They did this to help our brother in Palestine and to support the Islamic Jihad and other Palestinian resistance movements which are fighting against the tyranny and global arrogance in Israel. This is the first time we stopped this Israeli ship. Through this, we send a message to friends and enemies that the Yemeni naval forces are ready to help our brothers in Gaza with all available means, and they would also make futile any move against the Yemenis.
Yemen's operation that was carried out a few days after the leader's Abdul Malik al-Houthi's speech regarding the constant monitoring of Israeli ships revealed the weakness of the regime's intelligence system once again after the Al-Aqsa flawed operation. This operation will continue in the depth of the Red Sea until the regime's attack on Gaza stops.
All Israeli ships will remain the main target of the Yemeni naval forces, and this was only a successful beginning that God has promised to the oppressed, and the Israeli ship exactly fell into the hands of the oppressed.
We are standing on the deck of Galaxy Leader, the first Israeli ship we've seized in defense of our Palestinian brothers. This is not the only ship, and others will follow. We will continue this operation until the attacks on our Palestinian brothers are stopped.
Despite the great shock inflicted on the enemies and the pain of the indifference of the Arab world toward Gaza, Palestinians, whose words and actions are the same, are more valuable to us than anything.
And with that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Take care for now.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد،
روش خاصی دارد. اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. 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 کتاب الله.
In the limelight.
Elon Musk, who has projected himself as an advocate of free speech, must stand on the right side of history. The first voices that should be censored are those calling for the genocide of Palestinians, cheering the Zionist regime killing machine as it continues its murderous campaign in the besieged Gaza Strip. We take a look at the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. Elon Musk, the billionaire owner of X, formerly known as Twitter, can be outrageously unpredictable. He has shown it on numerous occasions in recent weeks, cunningly invoking words such as genocide. At risk of stating the obvious, anyone advocating the genocide of any group will be suspended from this platform, the founder of SpaceX and Tesla, who bought X last year, wrote on Saturday. In response, social media users interrogated him and reminded him of many Zionists who have been openly calling for the genocide of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip on X. If that's true, why didn't you suspend this genocidal Zionist? Asked Jackson Hinkle, a social media influencer who has been fervently tweeting in support of Palestinians in recent weeks. Jackson Hinkle was referring to an ex-user named Yakovolf, who made a deeply provocative post on X. Flatten everything. Spare no school, no children's hospital, no old age home. Delete their entire gene pool off the face of the earth, wrote the Zionist hatemonger. Elon Musk had to answer to Jackson Hinkle and other ex-users who replied to his tweet. The ex-boss was echoing what he tweeted earlier on Saturday amid the controversy he generated with another tweet that was deemed anti-Semitic by pro-Israel lobbies in Washington. As I said earlier this week, decolonization, from the river to the sea, and similar euphemisms necessarily imply genocide, Musk tweeted in a clear attempt to appease the Zionist lobby. Clear calls for extreme violence are against our terms of service and will result in suspension. These tweets came after the European Union, Apple, Disney, IBM, Lionsgate and others announced that they were stopping advertisements on X over Elon Musk's anti-Semitic posts. It came as a rude shock to Elon Musk, as his social media network has reportedly seen a 54% drop in advertising revenue since he took over, as advertisement revenue previously accounted for 90% of the social media giant's total revenue. Earlier this week, Elon Musk endorsed a post by user Breaking Bat that said Jewish communities have been pushing the exact kind of dialectical hatred against whites that they claim to want people to stop using against them. A Apart from advertisers running away from Elon Musk, the White House also issued a strongly worded statement, clearly under the pressure of pro-Israel lobby groups in the United States. We condemn this abhorrent promotion of anti-Semitic and racist hatred in the strongest terms, which runs against our core values as Americans, a White House spokesman said on Friday, 17th of November. The European Commission, in a statement on Friday, 17th of November, also announced that it was halting advertisements over the alarming increase in disinformation and hate speech. This is about our advertisement campaigns. For these, we continuously assess and evaluate the media environment for our campaigns in view of our communication objectives, the spokesman said. Stung by the growing criticism, Elon Musk took a step back and warned that pro-Palestine content will be suspended, or in other words, those calling for an end to the Israeli genocide in Gaza will face the axe. While genocide cheerleaders, such as those calling for flattening schools, children's hospitals and age-old homes in the besieged coastal sliver, have their accounts running without any restrictions, those calling for a halt to bloodletting and occupation are going to be suspended by Elon Musk. The first voices that should be censored are those calling for the genocide of Palestinians, cheering the Zionist regime killing machine as it continues its murderous campaign in the besieged Gaza Strip. Elon Musk, who has projected himself as an advocate of free speech, must stand on the right side of history. The website Cradle has also covered the same story and tells us more. U.S. technology giant Meta, the conglomerate behind Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, on 13th of October announced it is taking steps to remove praise and substantive support of Palestinian resistance factions fighting against the Israeli army on the Gaza border. The decision by the technology giant comes on the heels of a pressure campaign launched by the European Commission to remove illegal and harmful content to comply with its Digital Services Act. Meta's compliance contrasts with that of X, formerly known as Twitter, as the company asked Brussels for more information of violations on its site. This resulted in an investigation being launched into X, formerly known as Twitter. This week, European Union officials sent a letter to ex-owner Elon Musk, warning that if an investigation finds the company had failed to meet its legal obligations in connection with content about the Israeli-Palestinian war, it could face steep penalties, including billions in fines, according to a CNN report.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. This is Muslim Lady from IRIB English Radio, and this is Umabiha Mukhtar, the host of the show. And our guest today is Sister Salma Khalfan, who is an Islamic researcher and is going to enlighten us about the status of a woman according to the leader, according to Sayyid Ali Khamenei. So first, Sister Salma, Salamun alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you also.
We have been talking a lot about what Rahbar's view and what Sayyid Ali Khamenei's view is about, you know, the women crisis and how women are looked at in today's world and how women are supposed to be looked at very greatly, in fact, in the eyes of Allah. So can you tell us what he has to say about how to make the family more peaceful and loving and, you know, a place where a child can go and feel, you know, they that is where their solace is and lies?
Yes. He mentions that it is important to have a compromising attitude in the family. Like, we know that everything is not perfect, right? He says that compromise may not be such a good approach in all areas of life, but the most appropriate application of compromise is within the framework of the married life. He stresses married life. As a newlywed couple, you will gradually find more and more about your partner's character. As you live with your partner, you know, you might know some characteristics, the main characteristics, the general characteristics of your spouse. But when you live under one roof, you'll come to know more about him. You know, the intricate part of how he behaves, in what instances, how does he behave. So such findings should not discourage you that, oh, I thought he was like this, you know. But now he turned out to be like this. After all, there are no ideal men and women, you know, like perfect men and women in the whole world. Therefore, you should be tolerant. So he wants the sabr to be practiced here. When you face occasional loss of temper, harshness of words and the like. So he knows that these things will occur in a married life. Nobody thinks just the same way. There are bound to be some conflicts, but be tolerant. Okay? Kindness and love are the only remedies for such unpleasant occasions. So he wants the bad to be returned with the good.
True, yeah.
He says, so it shows how his character is, right?
Yeah.
Our beloved leader's character is like that. When somebody is harsh to him, he returns them with kindness. Because his words are spoken in such a way that you're able to relate to his personality.
And I feel like that is how we all wish, you know, we could be looked at as.
Yes.
Like we wish somebody would be like that to us, you know, who is able to, you know, compromise and understand that we are not perfect and please help us.
Yes.
And I think that is how Allah
is. Yeah, it's a two-way street. You see, it begins with a woman because she has more endurance, more sympathy, more love to show. So if she starts it, then when the man realizes how beautiful this aspect is, he will get to that same, you know, kind of attitude.
Right.
So a woman can start off with, I think our beloved leader, Sayyid Ali Khamenei, wants to stress upon the women here too much. That you come forward first. You show your this attitude of showing your love and your kindness. Okay, so one point that should always be remembered, he says, is the question of strengthening each other's virtues and Islamic values. This is the point in marriage, that you don't just, you know, feel that, okay, my spouse has this kind of virtue, oh, I can't do anything about it, this kind of attitude. You have to strengthen that attitude. And if he has it, you have to let him subsist to that attitude. For example, if your husband is a kind man or your wife is a kind woman, make her kindness grow. There is no, you know, end to that kind of perfection.
Right.
Allah wants these virtues to grow, keep on growing. So if he has a kind of strength and ability, make sure that he grows in that ability. And that depends on one spouse towards the other. That's what Ayatollah Khamenei wants, you know, he says in his words that, you know, like strengthening each other's virtues and Islamic values. I think in Islamic values, he means by, you know, our values that we have in religion, for example, the love of Allah, the love of Ahlul Bayt, you know, our practices that we practice, Amr bil Ma'ruf, Salat, so we should strengthen them, like in the sense, be compliment for each other. Like, for example, if we know that our, you know, prepare the grounds for his salat, encourage him to go to the mosque, you know, go together to the mosque, or things like that, me fasting together.
And
it's,
I think
it's a beautiful
these,
thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and I think all these akhlaqi aspects like these, you'll see in the Western world today, when somebody is kind-hearted or respectful, we see straight away they post this video, you know, everyone's comments are, wow, you know, such a kind person, such a good person. And it's looked at as something that, you know, it's so rare to find somebody who is so good in these ethics.
Yeah.
While in our religion, Allah is constantly reminding us how we have to try and be such a person. You know, how we have to be in a relationship. It's even more harder when we say that. In Farsi, we say, you know, hamsar, it's like your one head kind of thing, that we are together in this. It's kind of showing us that in this unity that you are in this marriage, you're supposed to be best in all of this together, you know, work together.
And strengthen each other together.
Just the way you
said. And complete each other and perfect each other.
Yes.
So strengthening each other's virtues and Islamic values. You must try to make your convictions even more firm and strong in the course of your married life, as well as in the social areas you happen to be. For example, your conviction and faith here, Ayatollah, might refer to, for example, wherever you are, for example, your attitude should show that you are coming from a family which is like a strong, solidified family. You shouldn't be like light and, you know, lightheaded and make people, you know, just easily be taken away. Things like that. You should show through your attitude that now you have a, for example, you have a spouse to protect you.
Yeah.
You know, girls should
strength,
not feel, the strength.
It's very true. Ahsan.
And also, at the same time, you should also spread this attitude of your good behavior
towards
the people.
Before we continue this very interesting conversation, we'll just take a short break and we'll be back, inshallah.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
So we have been talking about, you know, how Rahbar has said about in a marriage, you know, we have to try and be tolerant. We have to try and bring this kindness. We have to bring this unity between each other and strengthen each other's virtues, which you had mentioned quite a bit. It's so important to be in this together. I feel like right now in the world today, a lot of people don't want to get married because of all the bad experiences they've heard from other people. And they feel like, oh, you know, their marriage went south, so we are not going to get married.
Yes.
We don't want to take this trouble. So how can we encourage this still? Like, how can we tell them that Islam has kind of given a solution and we shouldn't always look at those people's marriages? Maybe you can give some idea on how to look at our stronger role models, you know, who have taken marriage so importantly.
Yeah, so before that, Sayyid, Ayatollah Khamenei himself says that you should be role models.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you go to the society, your deeds and actions should portray in such a manner that people are influenced, that so-and-so is married, and so-and-so behaves like this, and so is so concerned about this, their husband or their wife. So the marriage must be a very beautiful thing. Unfortunately, we see that from a divorced family hails a child who doesn't want to get married.
Yeah.
Or a boy or a girl. They've seen this kind of... Or a marriage that is not very sound. It always has some kind of things happening, you know, some kind of situations that the husband and wife are always quarreling. The child is afraid. They think that it's their fault, you know.
Yeah.
So the child does never want to get married when he comes from that family. But I've heard a lot of children like that. They feel so insecure. They feel marriage is not a good thing, not a good institution. So here... Ayatollah Khamenei says that when you go to the society, portray your deeds and actions in such a way that, and your behavior, that you influence others in these matters, in religious matters also. Like it's an amr bil ma'aruf, like Imam Ali says, kunu du'ata nas bi ghayri al-sinatikum. You know, like call people without your tongues, with your actions, he means, right?
Yeah.
So your actions should be in such a way, you should be so chaste, you should be so well-mannered, you should show so much maturity that when people see, this young girl is married, I want to also get married. Who said that a person has to get so... Oh, this person is still studying and she's so well behaved, and she's like, if she goes to a school or something, the schools, the university sees that this girl is in university, she's married and she's coming to still learn. Look at her behavior, she's so modest. That even I want to get married the same way.
It's attractive.
It's very attractive. And people see that outlook also, you see, the outside look. This way you will awaken religious values also. So Ayatollah Khamenei is working in all levels, you know, family level, personal level. He wants to work on the society level. At the same time, he wants to work in the family level as well. So when he says this, that this way you will awaken religious values also in other people and help them strengthen their values. It's an amr bil maruf in a way, right?
True, true.
So family, solidifying the roots of the family, help you also spread in the society. It shows the society sees this as a beautiful image, and they feel like also practicing and emulating what you are doing. He says, don't look at what people say that you can do it later. Show it in your actions that, you know, your daily prayers are important for you. Whenever this it happens to me, perhaps someone comes along and objects, you could do this later. Do not pay attention to such objections. Mm. You be firm. Remember, Ayatollah Khamenei wants us to be a firm person, a solid personality. You're not taking anybody's influence just like that. No. He wants us to be with our own, you know, kind of image, our personality, the Islamic personality.
Very true.
Such behavior is to your own advantage, he says, and to the advantage of the society you live in. And then in this speech, he prays for the people also. You know, he's addressing the university students who are young students, and yeah. He says, I hope that inshallah, God willing, my recommendations will help you and make your married life a firmer and sweeter and more lasting relationship. How much he used to, you know, like encourage marriage. We've heard many stories, yeah, that he goes mountain climbing and he does this kind of exercises.
Yeah,
He saw a couple going together and he asked them, are you married? He was so like good about it, like a real father. He said, come, let me make your marriage lawful. Let me make it halal. I will recite your aqd.
Yeah.
The people get so influenced, that couple, that they invite him, and the parents are so, like, you know, perplexed and yet, you know, happy at the same time that this great leader is coming to recite the children's aqd. And they told our beloved leader that maybe we are not, you know, allowed to get married. Our parents are refusing. We have family conflicts. But then the families also got united through this beloved leader and his words and his good energy.
He's so caring.
And yeah, he's so caring. He wants this relationship to take place because he yearns for this world to be a better place to live in, through the families, through the society, such that it could create a whole revolution before the uprising of our leader, Ajallahu Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif, inshallah.
I feel like we tend to really not understand what a pivotal role Rahbar has in our lives.
Yeah.
We kind of take him for granted when he is so caring and he thinks about all of us all the time. We just listen to what the Western media is telling us about our own leader. You just need to really research about him, find out about him, and realize what a great blessing we have in this country. Alhamdulillah. Inshallah, we pray to Allah, you know, that we get the tawfiq to become as loving as
and
he is.
And walk according to what he says, right?
Very much, yes.
Because that would make him happy that, look, his words are adhered to, listened to. Because what he says is nothing but the pure message of the Holy Prophet and the Aimmah. They're not also his words. He's just trying to give them in different styles and explain to us according to what are the, you know, the matters going on, the things that are going on. Like, as far as the women issues are concerned, so much stress on the family. Why? Like, I was thinking, why? So much stress on the talents of women being exposed. Why?
Yeah.
All this has a secret to it. And that's why he says it, you know, like openly.
True.
In his lectures, in his speeches.
Inshallah, we get to read more of his work, inshallah. Thank you very much. It has been a really nice, engaging conversation. And inshallah, hoping to see you in the next episode.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
United Nations appointed independent human rights experts are saying police and the criminal justice system in the United States require urgent reform to eradicate systemic racism against people of African descent. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Bloomberg News Agency has covered this story and tells us more. A United Nations Special Rapporteur has expressed shock at the mutually reinforcing manifestations of systemic racism in the United States, saying the country is at a critical juncture in the fight against racism. K.P. Ashwini, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Contemporary Forms of Racism, Xenophobia and Related Intolerance, made the remark during an interview with UN News on Tuesday, 14th of November, following her 14-day fact-finding mission on systematic racism in the United States. She said, "These manifestations of racism impacted those that racially marginalized groups at every stage of their lives, historically, systematically, and institutionally." The independent expert went on to say that selective amnesia was an issue in some states when it comes to reckoning with race and racism. K.P. Ashwini further noted that mainstream America is now more aware of systemic racism following the large-scale racial protests of 2020 and the promises from the Biden administration to improve racial equality in America. However, she said, racism very much persists in the United States and has manifested in different forms, adding that she was disheartened and disappointed by how systemic racism can impact the lives of individuals. K.P. Ashwini also stressed that one of the major worries is the dissemination of misinformation and disinformation, which further escalates racism, racial discrimination, hate crimes and xenophobia. She added, I think the moment and the space to talk this challenge forward to eliminate and eradicate racism or racial discrimination should be taken very positively in a mindful manner. Ashwini traveled across the United States between 31st of October and 14th of November, from Detroit, Michigan, to the Louisiana coast, also visiting Los Angeles, Atlanta, and Washington, D.C. She explained that fact-finding mission in the U.S. was her first official country mission, and the purpose was to assess the country's situation, and her mandate covered racism, racial discrimination, and xenophobia. The United Nations Special Rapporteur further stated that she will shortly elaborate on her findings in the report that will be presented next year at the United Nations Human Rights Council. The website of United Nations News has also covered the same story and tells us more. United Nations appointed independent rights experts are saying police and criminal justice system in the United States require urgent reform to eradicate systemic racism against people of African descent. A new report by the United Nations International Experts Advancing Racial Justice and Equality in Policing, published after an official visit to the country, shows that black people in the United States are three times more likely to be killed by police than if they were white, with 4.5 times more likely to be incarcerated. Dr. Tracy Kesey, an expert member of the task force, said the testimonies she heard on how victims do not get justice or redress were heartbreaking and unacceptable. She added, all actors involved, including police departments and police unions, must join forces to combat the prevailing impunity. During their country visit, the experts heard testimonies from 133 affected individuals, visited five detention centers, and held meetings with civil society groups, as well as government and police authorities in the districts of Columbia, in Atlanta, Georgia, Los Angeles, California, Chicago, Illinois, Minneapolis, and New York City. They say racism in the United States, a legacy of slavery, the slave trade, and 100 years of legalized apartheid that followed slavery's abolition, continue to exist in the form of racial profiling, police killings, and many other human rights violations. The experts condemn the appalling overrepresentation of people of African descent in America's criminal justice system. They express concern over instances of children from the diaspora being sentenced to life imprisonment, pregnant women in prison being chained during childbirth, and persons held in solitary confinement for 10 years or more. The report notes that there are more than 1,000 cases of killings by police officers each year in America, but only 1% result in police officers being charged. The experts warn that if use of force regulations in the United States are not reformed, in accordance with international standards, killing by police officers will continue. Professor Juan Mendez, an expert member of the mechanism, said, "We reject the bad apple theory. There is strong evidence suggesting that the abusive behavior of some individual police officers is part of a broader and menacing pattern." Professor Mendez stressed that the police and justice system reflect the attitudes prevalent in U.S. society and institutions and called for comprehensive reform. The report's authors insist that armed police officers should not be default first responders to every social issue in the United States, including mental health crises or homelessness, and called for alternative responses to policing. The human rights experts heightened the burden of a workload on police officers, as well as systemic racism within police departments, which need to be addressed. The report made 30 recommendations to the United States and all of its jurisdictions, including more than 18,000 police agencies in the country. It also highlighted local and federal good practices. Professor Juan Mendez said, We encourage the good practices to be reproduced in other parts of the country. We look forward to continuing to cooperate with the United States to implement these recommendations. The website Axios.com has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to a new survey, most Americans believe companies are not meeting the promises they have made to fight racism in their organizations and in general. A report from the global communications firm Edelman, which was first reported by Axios, found that 62% of respondents think companies are doing a mediocre or worse job fighting racism, up 8 percentage points from a survey last year. Edelman compiled the report as part of its annual Trust Barometer, which studies the levels of trust that the public has in various institutions like government, media, business, and non-governmental organizations. The report focused on the intersection of business and racial justice. Researchers found 60% of executives believe their organization has made a lot of meaningful progress on addressing racism and racial inequalities. But that contrasts with only 28% of mid-level employees and 18% of associated employees saying the same. But the report did find that companies addressing racism is important to the respondents, with almost 70% saying they are worried about systemic racism and racial injustice, up 8 percentage points from last year. Employees were also much more likely to indicate that they want to stay with a company for many years if their employer is making a lot of progress on addressing racism and racial inequalities at the workplace. Likewise, 85% of those who said their employer is making a lot of progress want to stay, while only 46% of those who said their employer is making no progress said the same. Researchers found all major institutions are not trusted to do what is right when responding to systemic racism and racial injustice in the country. Only 47% said they trust businesses and non-governmental organizations, 38% trust media, and 37% trust the government.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
ask for our ministry as a mediator in the war on Gaza, says the truth in the besieged